the, what was it?
Yeah.
59.
Is that when it was? That long ago.
No, not that long ago. Yeah. It was 8 years ago.
Was it?
And you told that it's all gone now.
Yeah.
Or at least. Yeah. Now, but you see.
I do have that same judgment, but I have to emphasize that in the intervening periods, I've been somewhat away from that field. Mm-hmm. But I don't have the impression that any, you know, major new ideas or major new studies have come out of the field. And as I have seen the communication field from my present position, mm-hmm. how do I communicate to the villagers of the world about population? I have not been able, I have not seen the opportunities of utilizing communication research in any major way, and I've tried.
But there is tremendous amount of communication research done in almost every university, and more and more universities are adopting communications, communicology,
right,
the curriculum. Yeah. Do you think that's just repetitious, some kind of redundancy type of...
I think it's various things. Partly, I think it became fashionable. Mm-hmm. I think, I must say, I think I came into the field in a way just at the right time for an ambitious young man, because the field was just emerging as one of the major fashions in the social sciences, and I rode with it.
And you are classified as one of the fives, at least in Scandinavia. You yourself divided the field for to four.
Yeah.
But at least you can be classified as one of the forefathers as well.
Yeah. Well,
with your huge studies of the content analysis.
Anyway. So partly it was a fad, and you know, it's like Molière's Gentleman, everyone found he was speaking prose, so journalism schools became communication schools. It was a fancy title and so on. Now, there have been a variety of things that have been tried. The Michigan State Group had one sort of line on it, and Osgood at Illinois had an approach to it, but I don't have the impression that there is another line, let's say, to add to the Lazarsfeld, Laswell, Hovland, and Lewin, if you want to call that.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, you are right. There are several combinations of these, but still the same basis.
The MIT Group International Communication, well, you know, I supported them. I was at the Ford Foundation and set up that center, and Ithiel Poole and the Laswell Inspire and Lazarsfeld and so on were on the committee. And they've done good work, and Ithiel Poole is certainly a terribly able fellow, but I don't see that anything distinctive particularly has come out of there. But you know, I'm in a way I'm unfair because I keep wanting to say that I haven't kept up to it. I don't feel that I'm up to date on the communication field. I see the POQ and what goes through that. I know a little bit about what Will Schramm does at Stanford. I have the impression that's the best center in the U.S. now.
Yeah, it's the most powerful, and maybe as measured by the quality of output, it's
that's
best
my impression. I came to feel at about the time I wrote that piece, and I feel it more strongly today in this position, that the field, if it was going to rescue itself, and this is what I would have done if I'd stayed in it, I would have turned in a policy direction from an academic, theoretical, methodological direction. I would have turned myself toward the broad public policy questions of what a communication system ought to be.
More or less normative and somehow practical, more close to life aspect.
In the terms I use here now, because practical is an invidious term to academics, and pragmatic and operational, I call it professional. I'm more professional rather than academic, if I can make that distinction. Mm-hmm. I consider myself now a professional social researcher. I'm applying whatever skills I've got now to population. Mm-hmm. I did it to graduate education 6-7 years ago before I came here. And I feel very strongly that in the population field, where I believe this is, say, the world's second greatest problem today, to do something about population.
After the war problem, or
correct, after the bomb, the population is the second most important problem. That I'm impatient, I confess, if someone wants to do sort of an academic communication experiment, whether if he wants to study whether if I print my family planning leaflet in blue rather than red,
mm-hmm.
will it be more effective?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that's just playing a game.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to play academic games, then go back to the academy and play them. But this is serious.
Mm-hmm.
And here, you only do that communication research on which you need in order to make a policy decision. What's the head of the Indian family planning program
mm-hmm.
to do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I say, all right, we'll make him a Disney film. Let's see if we can get that in every movie theater in India
mm-hmm.
in a period of 6 months and out into the field and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you can see a communication, if you can see a policy decision that he can realistically make, in which your research can make a difference, can give him a little better leverage on the decision, okay. Otherwise, I haven't been able to say to people here, even though they expect me to, that such and such a communication research project is a highly desirable one in the family planning field. I haven't done any here myself, really. Maybe Tai Chung is an exception. But that wasn't a mass media thing. That's a word-of-mouth affair. Well, so what I'm saying is that I haven't particularly changed my judgment. I really don't have a right to judge because
mm-hmm.
I haven't been looking over everybody's shoulder as I did before. I don't have the impression that there are any new lines of inquiry that have emerged or new concepts or new insights or many new propositions, goodness knows. You know our inventory of
mm-hmm.
human behavior, the inventory. That chapter is, that's what there is. And I haven't been able to utilize it particularly here. But if there was a new line, I would have, even though Laswell's wasn't really that, I would have made it a communication policy line. And in a way, Schramm does. You see, because Schramm writes
very
on
much
the ethics of newspapers, and he writes on educational television and on the relationship of educational commercial television
yeah.
and so on.
But you see, after traveling through about 20 American universities and seeing at least the top places where communications research is done, I have the feeling that the biggest crowd of communication researchers are just those academic, non-professional, almost hostile
yeah.
to the professional field. Egghead type of guys who think that Schramm is just a guy who makes some lip service and no science really.
That's right.
He's not a key square
yeah,
guy.
He came out of a journalism school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
well,
right.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Well, and
it's to their discredit, in my
opinion. Now there seems to be a kind of split half of the field, and it seems to me that the tomorrow of communications research is less and less what Schramm himself represents, but rather than what his co-workers do, those very hard science type of guys.
Mm-hmm. That's the way the field is going, you think?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't say anything if
yeah.
it is bad or good.
Yeah.
At least I would like to see the field what you are speaking about, this professional communication.
Well,
but there is not very much of it anymore.
No. The Columbia Journalism School is an instance of this kind of thing, but in academic circles, that, you see, is that's low-grade stuff, too. That's journalism.
That's journalism, yes.
Yeah, which is a sort of a derogatory term.
Yeah.
But even but when those fellows do all their hard science and you back off 5 years later and look, you know, what the hell is it? What does it really come to something?
Well, that's...
Does one learn
that's
much?
That's rather close to, let's say, psychology or academic sociology, which is science for science and not so
yeah.
much for life.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a false assumption to measure the output of communications research with the yardsticks of practical professional life.
Well, I don't even require that. But I do require to measure it by their own instrument, namely contribution to knowledge. Now,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
What propositions have they established?
Yeah. And now you came to the very problem. There is no single framework where to operate. No communications theory, communication yeah. theory. It's yeah. a kind of everybody is trying to find his way in a darkness.
Yeah. Well, now I have a framework. You seem to know something about me. You probably know enough to know that people consider me anti-theoretical, and maybe in a way that's right. I think there's been too much premature theorizing in the part of the social sciences that I pretend to know something, sociology, in these fields. I don't really know in my own mind what a communication theory would look like if I ran up against it this afternoon. More than that, I think that many of the people who talk like that don't know either. Mm-hmm. Really what they want. They're grabbing at something. Theory is a very prestigious word and mm-hmm. so forth. And we don't have a social theory, we don't have a unified sociological theory, we don't have a communication theory. Well, what the hell would it be? Well, Shannon and Weaver had a communication. Yeah. That I know, but that isn't what they're talking about. And God knows they're not talking about McLuhan, I assume. Yeah. My feeling is that, how shall I put it, that, well, almost, we have to talk too briefly, so I'll speak in shorthand, that you approach a communication theory the way you approach happiness. Mm-hmm. You don't start out to be, I'm going to be happy today. Mm-hmm. You're happy if what you're, that's an indirect consequence of your adjustment to your wife or your family or your job or whatever the hell it is, your health and so forth. I think a communication theory will emerge, if it's going to, if we get a solid body of important empirical propositions documented on communication behavior. And when you put those together and, so to speak, add them up, that's the theory. That's it, yes. Instead of coming at it the other way. That's why I'm a findings man. Mm. You know, in human behavior, we deal with findings, that is, propositions, generalizations.
Yeah.
Now, what are the... So that I ask the... I don't... These fellows can play hard science. That's all right. They can play that academic game, and that's a very important one. I don't derogate it, except I want to know, you know, after you've been at it for a while, 5 years, a decade, I don't know what it is, what are the propositions?
Well, these hard academic guys... these almost anti-professionals agree with you. They say everything we are looking for is propositions.
Yeah, well, good. Well, let's see.
And then they put up their silly experimental situations and compare black and blue printing.
Yeah, well, you see, now what does that come to in the end?
Well, of course, that's one aspect of the behavior, but the question remains whether it is significant or not.
Yeah. See, let me give you a good example of my effort to, now you remind me of it, to apply communication research here. I actually sat at this desk with the human behavior book and went through every proposition asking myself, can I use this on population? Can I use this on population? Can I use this on population? But Hovland was, of course, a very important fellow. Mm-hmm. And the famous Hovland experiments in the Army on one-sided, two-sided communication.
Yes.
And he did them, and something emerged, and we think we know something about that. All right, so I ask myself, here's what goes through my mind. Here we're going to prepare some communication materials for an Indian villager about family planning, about a particular method of family planning. Now, should we tell her family planning is the greatest thing ever and there's absolutely nothing wrong with it? Or should we say family planning is very good and so on, but then there are these things that are on the other side of the issue, and now you decide. Mm-hmm. Or even with regard to a particular method, you have to say this is a very good thing. You'll never have a baby, and it'll never no side effects, and won't make you sick. Or should you say now, if you take the pill, if you do it properly, you won't have a child. But you've got to do it regularly and stop then, and you might have some stomach ache, and you might have some nausea, and you might have, and so forth and so forth. Well, so I ask mine. Now I look at Hovland, and I see the result. But before I even get to Hovland, I say to myself, on ethical and humanitarian grounds, I tell them everything I know. Anyway, if there are things wrong with it, I better tell them. Just on ethical grounds, leave out the science, whether it's convenient or not, I dasn't not tell them. I should tell them everything I know if they want to know it.
besides that, I know that if they do get nausea, and I haven't told them they're going to, why then they'll be madder than if I'd prepared them.
Yeah.
And the rumors, the bad rumors, will spread. So on expediency ground, too, I should tell them. Mm-hmm. First on ethical grounds, then on, because I know that'll boomerang on me. Mm-hmm. So I've made the decision before I get to the research doesn't help me much either, but yeah. The decision is made before I get there.
Yeah. And so and what I should do. Very much use of Hovland anymore.
Well, not Hovland is a great big corpus of work, but that particular finding, you know, and that's a pretty clear one. And it's at least theoretically relevant to my concern. So I don't get much.
In a way, I'm in a similar position like you. I'm going to set up a research center to the Finnish Broadcasting Company to make it possible for long-range planning of a monopole broadcasting system and even the everyday programming to take advantage of research.
Yeah.
And I face the very same problems as you do, and I must say that very much I share your opinions that the applications of the studies are very limited.
You don't do a piece of research unless, in principle, unless there's an administrative decision that it can speak to. Mm. See, now that's what Madison Avenue does. There, it's all aimed at policy. The policies happen to be trivial. That is, should the soap wrapper be brown or blue? Mm-hmm. Well, if you've got a great competition in soaps, it may be that black or blue, and if 1% of the market is the difference between making a hell of a lot of money and not making any, then that wrapper can be important. Mm-hmm. And they do very sophisticated research here, in just technically, but on a completely trivial problem. You know, what the hell do I care whether they sell 1% more or 1% less of their particular brand of soap? That, you know, that's not a serious matter. I want to get one. I'll only give you one reprint to take away.
Well,
I'd like a reprint of my Shostak article if you can find it. Thanks,
Dr. Berlson. I don't mind other stuff either. I would appreciate getting some. Material of your present interests, if you can find something which is not classified or business or something
that. Nothing here is classified, but it's all heavily population. But this thing is where this also is population. But I use it; it's a little thing. I use it as an occasion to spell out some of my current feelings about the proper way and the improper way to do applied social research.
Fine. Where was that published?
It was published in a symposium called Sociology in Action. Uh-huh. It was a series of cases of how sociology was applied to a whole variety of practical concerns and what happened, including case studies where this is what we did and didn't come to anything.
Yeah.
You know, negative cases as well. Mm-hmm. And we reported on the so-called Tai Chung study, which was a very elaborate and I think, well, now sort of famous study in our field. So the first three or four pages of this are what we did in Tai Chung. Mm-hmm. And then the second three or four pages, which are the ones I'm directing to your attention, are how this relates to the broader issue of how you do this thing well and badly. Yes. And it's this academic professional distinction that I'm trying to...
Are you now doing some kind of follow-up studies in professional way in India when you begin this film campaign, for instance?
We won't. The Ford Foundation... Thanks. Yeah, this is the little thing, and the first few pages are Taiwan, but then here's where I begin to putting the behavioral sciences to work and so on.
Well, fine. Thank you very much.
But no, there probably would be very little of that. Probably very little of that. You mean finding out how people like it? And
yeah. Kinds of.
I've worried a certain amount about pre-testing it, because it's going to be made for cultures all over the world, as you may have noticed, this is a kind of a composite man.
Mm. And in the storyboard, see if I can. Mm. You see, it begins with
who
Donald.
They are.
This
they
is
are business.
Yeah, Disney
people.
Studio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We hope to call it this. So Donald Duck finally gets organized, and he says, "Now, picture for you one of the world's Earth's most unusual inhabitants, man."
Mm-hmm.
Now there are all sorts of men.
Yeah.
And then we've got the five different kinds of. There's
oh,
a
yeah.
Western man and an
yeah.
Oriental man and an
That's
Indian
right.
man and an African man and so
yeah.
on. And we can put them all together. See, here are all the men.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put them all together, and here's the composite. So this
oh,
fellow
my.
Is this fellow.
Oh, yeah. He's a kind of
least
square
right.
of all
right.
different.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's got the clothes, you see. Their clothes are partly his clothes, partly. See, he's got his hat and his.
This would be an attractive matter of, or subject for a psychologist who tries
yeah,
to find out perception or different
yeah.
Stereotypes.
Well, so anyway, here. So then mm-hmm. here we've got the common man. Well,
mm-hmm.
it begins to go on, and pretty soon he has a wife,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
Then there are lots of them. See, and they
yeah.
keep multiplying,
yeah.
and so
yeah.
we get into the problem.
Uh-huh.
Well. Now, I'm taking this. This is what I meant to mention with regard to so-called pretensing. Next week in Santiago, Chile, happens to be a big international conference
uh-huh.
of the International Planned Parenthood Federation. So there'll
yeah.
be 600-700 people from all over the world. Everybody who's anybody will be in Santiago
uh-huh.
next week.
Uh-huh.
And Wednesday afternoon, a week from today.
Yeah.
I am. Presenting to whoever wants to come and look at it,
mm-hmm.
the storyboard of the Disney, what you just saw. So here's the actual storyboard. See, I'll put these up on the wall,
oh,
and then I will
funny.
Narrate it. See,
yeah.
it comes in. This is what you just saw.
Yes.
There are the.
And then.
And I will say. How does this strike you? And we'll have people from every continent, from 50 countries there, and maybe somebody will say, "Oh, you can't do that in my country," or
mm-hmm.
you know, so.
Yeah.
Well, it's a little late to change things,
yeah.
but if there's something terribly wrong with it that we learn next Wednesday, we'll change it.
Now, your campaign will be centered around one or several films.
We use all kinds, everything we. I've made up
yeah.
various.
These are the
kits.
Characters. Then there will be plenty of different themes and happenings.
That suitcase there
mm-hmm.
is a kit of communication materials for one of my favorite audiences to get at population control.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I haven't really been able to bring it off.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of the countries. With which we work, India, Pakistan, Taiwan, Korea,
yeah.
Indonesia, and so on, they all have young men under draft in the army,
yeah.
2 years, Turkey, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I say to myself, here's a perfect opportunity to indoctrinate young men in the virtues of birth control just before they go back into civilian life.
Yes.
They're going back at the beginning of their own marital careers. In 10 years, they're going to be the leaders in the villages anyway. They go back in sufficient numbers so they can reinforce one another back in the villages. They go back into all strata of the society, indoctrinate them in family planning 2 months before they are released. That is what we call the military kit. That's a kit of materials aimed at the young men in the army to carry on an informational program. There's film strips and flannel boards. There's what I call the Joe Jim story. Here are two friends who are in the army together. They're both going back into the same town. And they go back and they both get married about the same time. One of them does birth control, one of them doesn't. 5 years later, he has two children, a happy family, well-dressed, money to educate the children. He has six children, a worn-out wife, sickly kids, himself, and so
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
as well as straight physiology of reproduction is in there too.
Yeah, I see. Well, that's really great. I told them it's not my intention to speak anything about the family planning business, but while you are there and the tape recorder is on, I just want to put you one more question, which you implicitly already answered. What is the what are the short-term most urgent steps in population planning internationally viewed, and then what are the long-range most important goals?
Well, it depends how you mean the first question. What needs most to be done in the population control field in order to solve the problem in the developing countries? Is that the kind of question?
And well, or particularly, what are the biggest barriers?
I think that the two, if I could snap my fingers,
mm-hmm.
and have the two things I would most want. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow.
Yeah.
They would be these. First, I would ask for a better technology.
Mm-hmm.
I would ask for that injection, which would protect a woman for 2 years, and which could be reversed by another.
Self-made type of business, or
not even self-made. We could still get it injected if we had it, but we don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
Without any side effects.
Yeah.
And with complete effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of the ideal contraceptive. I'd like three of those.
Mm-hmm.
So that I would want a major improvement in the technology. Before you can sell something, you have to have something to sell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The second thing I'd ask for is a built-up organization in India, Pakistan, and so on.
All of these underdeveloped countries.
To take it to the people.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. You note that I don't ask for greater motivation on the part of. That's not one of the first two things.
Because
there's enough there to start.
There.
Something is there to start with.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get these two things,
mm-hmm.
then you could get it.
Did you say there is a third point you still want, or just these two?
No, well, I want lots of things. There are four things I would want.
Uh-huh.
Those are the first two.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next is I would want greater motivation and interest, sophisticated motivation about this on the part of the people themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We try to build it up via this film and so
forth.
And fourth is I would want stronger support, more continuous, more knowledgeable support by the elite, even in countries where there is a favorable policy.
As in this country?
No, I mean a national policy, as in India. It's
mm-hmm.
it's government policy to promote,
mm-hmm.
To cut the population growth.
Mm-hmm.
Even there, or in Turkey, where they passed a law to make this favorable, there still is a certain amount of ambivalence on the part of the elite.
Whether it is really important and
needed,
and
yes, and then there's some people think, well, it's you see, there are all sorts of undercover arguments. Turkey needs more people to defend itself.
Yeah,
we need to be 100 million instead of 30 million.
Yeah,
or because of the accident of history, most of the developing countries are non-white.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a new trick for the former colonial powers to keep these people subordinated.
That's right.
You don't want.
That's really present there, this belief.
Oh, yes.
Oh, boy.
You Americans don't want more Indians.
Yeah.
Why don't you want more Indians?
Yeah. And there you are. What do you answer to a guy who asks you that?
Well, I say in the first place, there are going to be more Indians. India is going to have a population of
mm-hmm.
a billion.
Mm-hmm.
Short of an atomic catastrophe, nothing will stop
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
The only question is, are you going to have them in the next 20, 25 years,
mm-hmm.
or will you have 50 years of time mm-hmm. before you have to accommodate a billion people
mm-hmm.
where you can't feed half that number right now?
Yeah.
Secondly, our population growth is far below yours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the average, the developed countries have a birth rate less than half
mm-hmm.
the birth rate of the developing countries. And the growth rate, our growth rate is far smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not talking about, we're growing faster than you, quite the contrary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got twice as many people, over twice as many people as we have right now, and you're growing twice as fast.
Mm-hmm.
So don't, and if they say, why don't you have a national program before you're just to, then my answer is we have local programs. We don't have a national one because we have a controlled population already, 85%.
Yeah.
So we don't need it. We need it for that other 15, and we're working on that. Mm-hmm. But we're just not in the same category.
Do they believe you?
Well, they believe the fact, but still there's that lingering there. You have
and
an ulterior motive.
That's a kind of persuasion or communication problem.
To the elite.
Yeah.
No question. And the elite of these countries, interestingly enough, they feel about their peasants the way some of our elite feel about Harlem.
Yeah.
Exactly. You can't do anything about Harlem. They just want to have
exactly.
kids. They don't get married. They don't have morality.
Yeah.
They don't have anything.
Yeah.
And what can you do with such animals?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the way the elite of some of these countries think of their own peasants.
Yeah.
So they say, well, why should we spend money on that? They're not interested.
Are you going to plan some of those movies to persuade these elites?
Yes, and as a matter of fact, we're planning a kind of a brochure, a leaflet, written at a very high level, aimed at these things, in economic terms, and trying to bring out some of these latent arguments. They won't say to you neo-colonials because they want to be polite, and they won't, unless they know you well, they won't say the military power bit. We need more people because that country over there, who's our enemy, is growing fast. So we dasn't cut down our, you know, even it's just to their advantage to do the other way, because military power needs a trained personnel now, not just bodies.
Okay, let's stop now. I have taken very much of your time.
Not at all. I'm delighted to talk with you.